right combination of retention, enrollment numbers, and active count, you can decide to make whatever money you want to make, right? But it was a given number of enrollments. So again, if you use Hafner as an example, when he was running at absolute peak revenue profitability, he was doing 22 enrollments a month, right? And within the EFC crowd, everybody had him tagged as a marketing genius, and I was always the contrarian. I was always a contrarian saying, well, there's no genius. If he can spend $12,000 a month and get 22 enrollments and, you know, a third of them he generated internally anyway, that's nothing special.
Right.
But the genius was he had 700 students and only 3 or 4% dropping out. And he had really good retention for the size. And I think you had mentioned the number of 400. My thought has always been that's 300 different changes. So, you know, once you break 300 active, all the systems have to change to accommodate it, the staffing levels have to change, and it very quickly goes from a family to a crowd if you're not really careful. So that's always been my threshold, my kind of pursuit of prime and multiple. And, you know, this is at my first school was 2,500 square feet, and peaked out at about 625 active. But I've always felt that with staff running it, 300 at 60,000-70,000 a month is prime, because it's fairly easy to manage still, and you get the revenue up, everything else works. Why don't, Jonathan, if you don't mind, why don't we put that kind of up in the middle of the table so we can catch Robert's potato chips?
Because the power cord won't be.
Always that's the problem. Okay, don't worry about it.
You want me to go down there and chew when he's here?
Oh, over there.
No.
I know, sir.
I won't make it.
But I certainly
trust this.
Hey, it's good we don't have any kids playing on the video game. They're all up
in the ball. It better be in the park.
Yeah, I hope so. So does that all make sense? I mean, so there's a lot of different ways to get to the same place, but In Buzz's case and in Keith's case, they have a very good average value per student. In part, thank you. In part because they're good. There's an extra glass or somewhere.
I have one.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you were getting more stuff.
No.
No, thank you. No. When all those little mastermind meetings, we were always with Dan Kennedy.
You have one master set of all of it.
Bob took it.
Well, Bob took it. It was a big pile of stuff that was hooked in.
Oh, but he also
took
it. Not really. But Bob has a copy of everything.
Maybe.
He does.
Maybe.
We didn't have 14 submissions, just so you know, I don't think.
Yeah,
you
know,
we have like 3 sets of
that. 3.
It's Sean Harvey's, that NBC there?
Yeah,
it's Sean Harvey's newsletter. It's Mike's birthday party thing, and it's Mike's
retention letters.
Big letters.
Yeah, big Mike.
Big guy.
Yeah.
Michael, Mike, oh. Mikey,
I'm
Big Mike.
Mike. What is Mike?
Oh, I'm Mike. You're Mikey.
I just need Mickey at that point.
My son is Mike.
Ferreira.
Furry.
The intent of your question was just how to get the balls to charge that much?
No, I mean, the intent of that question is to tell myself that's the simplest thing. I can go back and just raise our tuition $40 a month, and I don't even have to put an upgrade program in place for it yet.
If you should do both, then.
Right, well, then no matter what, that means that, okay, that money's still left on the table.
Yeah, I would say you should do both at once.
Right.
We've seen people make the mistake of doing one than the other. And with a big student base, that just confused the issue too much. part of the advantage of having an overall tuition price increase is it gives additional time leverage legitimately to get people to finalize the upgrade, right? So, yeah, I mean, you want that. You want that additional little leverage to get them to do it now. And we didn't mention this. Can you explain the pool safety?
A little twist on the rack card idea. Over the summer, one of my program directors put together half a dozen of these summer safety tips, and one was the pool safety. We had like car safety. There were different scenarios for tips, and we had like some basic information on the back. And what it enabled us to do, because we kind of had it explained as a community service tip, we were able to put it in the stores that normally would like put a display like Starbucks. And everybody kind of took it from us. We said, hey, we're doing community service event. We're doing free summer safety tips for people in the community. We'd like to leave some here. So they did. And I think this is the only hard copy I had. So I can, email the file to you and you can forward it to everyone.
By the way, anything you guys are willing to share, just email it to me or to Toby and we'll blast it back out to everybody. So, but that anchor in the point, it's the same as that children's hospital idea, is when you turn it into a community service or a charitable fundraiser, there's a lot more options of people who are willing to cooperate, right? So, one version is the $49 5-week plus a uniform, the check is written out to children's hospital or whatever charity you want to do. And Pizza Hut, Domino's, many times McDonald's will put it in the bag. We've also done fundraisers for the Ronald McDonald House specifically to get McDonald's to do trade liners and in the bags and so forth. In that case with the rag card. And my only critique was I would make headline about the deal, move the logo down, make it look less like a promotional piece, if that was the purpose, right? And like in Robert's case, that might let him get to 500 because there's some portion of the field change and so forth that haven't let him get him out already.
Is it passed around?
He's going to email it and I'll send it out to everybody.
We use them for face to face distribution too. Like we have stand outside of the supermarket and increase our safety tips and try to gain conversation, and if they're interested in the conversation, we knew they were possible.
Excellent. You're still working on figuring out the upgrade, and Mike's trying to figure out how to get everybody rowing the same direction and launch it across 60 employees.
Sir.
Again, there's two ways of thinking about all this stuff, and I don't mean to be repetitious for everybody else, but see, you should have something that's at the price point that a fairly small number of the students will charge, or will be willing to or able to pay. But once you have enough critical mass, and again, think in terms of 2,000 students. Well, with 2,000 students, 2% is 40 people, right? 10%.
Sorry, excuse me. Did anybody get a fish sandwich you made?
Fish sandwich?
Maybe the next one.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe. Thank you. But what happens is with numbers, you suddenly have leverage for more extravagant things and more variety of extravagant things, right? What happens in our industry, and you haven't fallen prey to it, and that's to be congratulated. But what happens in our industry, what people try to do is put in a, I'm a Taekwondo school, so I put in a Tai Chi program, I put in a yoga program, and I put in a cardio program, and I put in another thing. And what they try to do is put in a bunch of stuff, usually at lower price points than their main thing, thinking that more volume is going to get them somewhere. But see, where the big opportunity is taking that pyramid and at the top making higher and higher, more expensive things, right? And the question is across 2,000 students, let's take an extreme example. Would it be easier to get 1,000 more people at $100 a piece or 100 people at $1,000 a piece? Well, that's only 5%. You could rake off 5% at $1,000 a piece like that with the right offer. So now the question is can you get 50% of them, 1,000 people, paying $397 a month? I gotta tell you, that's a no-brainer. Okay, so if you got 1,000 people paying $397
myself and anyone.
Those are all the extras. Toby said you guys were still going to go over that.
No.
Oh, okay.
We've already passed these out.
Okay. Well,
these are extras.
Okay.
Bob, you give back to is that in there, Tim? The stuff I gave?
No. Well, I'll be making copies of those in a second, in a little bit.
No, those we don't need in here. No, the copies of his stuff we need.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll have those a little bit later.
Yeah. But see, when you run the numbers, right? And so, would it be reasonable to say across the entire organization you should be at some price point above or below 200 children, right? And I think Eric's, you know, concern is exactly right, especially in the sense of having a high price point and a lower one. If there is a psychological barrier of 200, so does it make sense to be a little over 200, right? Is, like in our case, I went from 197 to 247, right? Well, I'm not going to do a 207, and you already broke 200. Why not just, you know, go on up from there? But absolutely, it should make that you should have where like the entire organization is at or around $200. But that still doesn't negate the fact that you have 50% or more that can be at a higher price point. If you take, you know, Eric's numbers, it's 40%. If you take Sterling's numbers, it's 87%. That 87%, I got to tell you, is an outlier. It's hard to reproduce. Robert's doing it, right? But that's, you know, that's an outlier. But you should, and the other question again is like the cash deal, right? Is if people are renewing the black belt, should you allow some portion of them to prepay?
Yeah.
Now, should you become like mass training and try to cash everybody out? No, right? One is you don't want to be beating people up that much to be big cash. Comfortable. Two is chasing cash only, dampen sales. Because you end up with program directors, if they're not going to pay you cash, they don't get the sale. I want everybody renewed, and then the ones who want to prepay, great, right? But still, you know, like another example is La Valley. When we got La Valley to do some cash programs and some accelerated tuition and so forth, his gross went from 55 to 100. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost overnight. So it was just like that. The volume didn't change. The retention didn't change. But those two things changed. And so is the cash deal is probably good for a 25% bump in the average tuition, and the upgrade thing is good for anywhere from a 25% to a 75% bump. Okay. My rule of thumb has always been 75% of the business is from the renewals. Now, that's not just factoring in that's going to be a bump, but it's factoring in the longer programs and people who are going to stay a long time. And again, you take something like mass training, but they were really focused on cashing every enrollment out for 6 months. And, you know, now you've got to feed a lot of volume. And so if you take feeding a lot of volume, cashing people out for 6 months and not having a marketing system, it's true, right? But, see, I think that's asked backwards. I only like cash deals that are renewal. I don't really like cash enrollments. So I'd rather put them just straight on monthly and then 6 weeks renewal. And then have my rule of thumb. In fact, the way I came up with the whole upgrade idea 20 years ago, I think I was explaining to you, was I was going, if I'm going to do a third cash, how do I keep the billing even? Well, if I did a 50% bump here and a 50% bump here, so I do two that are monthly and one that's cash, that equals zero, right? So I've had a net negative influence. So, but if I did 150 to 170, 150 to 170, and they got rid of the 150 because they paid cash, my billing check went down, right? So I had gotten it where every renewal was neutral on the billing, and I was strictly looking at new monthly payment on enrollments. So if I could get $3,500 a month, a new monthly payment on the enrollments, and do a third cash on the renewals, now if we did 10 renewals a month, I was doing three cash deals at $12,000 a piece. And then six or seven deals at a bump of at least 50%, and it all worked out well. And that was like 20 years ago. And then more recently, when it was Clark that convinced me on the whole leadership structure. But, you know, then it's you can add another 100. And he was doing it fairly wimpy. He was doing like 150, 160, 170, 180 or something like that. But, you know, if we're already bumping 50% to begin with, just to go to black belt up, why not have, you know, why not have it go up, you know, dramatically from there? You know, so I ended up with a rule of thumb of leadership is double, and then black belt club or master club, whatever you want to call it, in between is about 50% bump. But, I mean, you've got 3 points of leverage. You know, 1 point of leverage is the upgrade. The other point of leverage is some prepays. Well, you're doing some.
Prepay, I would say, were pretty good. My newest school, with my youngest and most inexperienced manager, he's doing lousy.
Right.
But I've got guys that average, you know, even at our position rate, $25,000 a month in down payments.
Okay.
$34,000. Our headquarters school is $34,000
a month. Yeah, so that's already good. So, yeah. But the point of leverage is the upgrade switch and it's just an overall higher price point.
Right. I'm going to look at the stream.
Sure.
Okay. Good.
Carol, what's the biggest issue you'd like everybody to go to work on for you?
The biggest, not too complicated issue is that we have three programs. In Crown Valley, we added last May the kickboxing program. And I thought we should charge for it. My husband is the salesperson, and he insisted, starting at 79, we went up to 89, and 99, so there's still not enough. So after going to the first conference in November, I said, we need to go up to 149. He said, that won't work. That's not going to work. So I said, 1st of January, we're going up to 149. Sure enough, we had 102 people come in for their intros. Zero signed up. Which I kept asking, give it. The house is not committed. Well, that's not working. I told you it's not going to work. And I didn't get it until like last week. Zero? How do you even do that? So I thought, well, if I give him some better, you know, like you were talking about, some better way of selling it. Because I had written him and I said, you know, he still wants to mostly sell cars.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sell the music, no cars.
Right.
So then Robert was saying, well, they have the cards for the, you know, just 20 lessons, and then 6 months, and then 12 months. Maybe if I give him these options, then he can actually sell somebody.
Can I?
Or what?
Let me start with this. Any relationship advice I would give you just the opposite, you'd probably be better off. So this is just as a forewarning.
Relationship advice?
Yeah. No,
listen, I don't want to be mean or blunt or anything, but the biggest problem is your husband. He can't. You cannot have him selling the program right now because he's not selling the program. He doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe in the price, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And I mean, no, I know. I understand that, but
no, I mean, it's hard to get zero.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You could put an ATM machine on the wall with a sign over it that says if you want to enroll, put your credit card in and have better ratios.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, and it's got to be something coming from him in the sales process, the vibe. It's got to be something coming from him in the sales process, the vibe.
Yeah.
You know, they're totally reading him that he doesn't feel it's worthwhile, so why should they feel it's worthwhile?
At 0%, he's probably just blatantly telling them it's not worthwhile.
That's possible, too.
Yeah.
I could
say fuck you in the face to everybody who walked in the office and close 0% or
But what I think happened is after a while, when he wasn't not getting results, he didn't believe in it. He just started to prove it wrong.
Let me give you a comparable one. Take that out of being your husband, okay? Tim and Dave Cove are for years, and Tim's not involved in the organization, but Tim was a business guy, Dave was a martial arts guy, and Dave was always against anything that was a good idea.
But it's true.
And Dave was just the guy who wanted to go study Jeet Kune Do for 3 years so he could do heavy drills, but if, you know, any of the stuff, it wasn't his idea. And so I'm just hammering Tim about why are you guys, and you guys have all this stuff going on, and you got great service and everything, and you're charging that. And this is a long time ago. $97 a month or something like that, right? And he goes, well, you know, I always talk about with Dave, and Dave says, I'm screw Dave. Look, here's the deal. Why don't you just, you're in charge of the program directors, just go charge $149 for a month. Go every new enrollment the next month, go charge $149. And then at the end of the month, go show. Show Day, and they were doing like 45 enrollments at the main school a month, 50. Go Show Day, the 50 contracts, and I'd say, wow, Dave, I think we should charge $149 a month, and he says it's not going to work. He just plopped down the 50 contracts in front of him and says, well, this might indicate that it might work, and do it that way. And so finally I browbeat Tim into, okay, he's going to do it. And then Tim screwed it up. Because what Tim did is he went and told the program director at the school that they're now going to do that. And so the program director had like 10 intros that weekend, had a 0% closing ratio, and I talked to Tim 2 or 3 weeks ago, said, how's it going? Oh, well, that didn't work. We stopped. And I said, oh, okay, well, what didn't work? He goes, well, I gave it to Dave, and Dave had like 10 intros, and none of them enrolled, and he said the reason every one of them said they weren't going to enroll was too much, and so that didn't work. I said, Tim, that's not what I told you to do. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I said, Tim, I told you to go do the enrollments. And, you know, you got the dynamic of the program director in between. That's fine. You go do the enrollments for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and then you show the program director. Then you get the program director to do it for a month or so, and then you show them. That's what you should have done, not just hand it off to this guy, because as soon as you hand it off to a salesperson who believes they can't sell it, they manifest that, right? And it's exactly what you're dealing with. And now you have the next complication, which I'm of no use for you whatsoever. But you have the next complication of you have your husband in there who's trying to prove you wrong. Okay. And by the way, when I got divorced the first time, I had my ex-wife work for me for like 6 years after that. For a while, I had my ex-wife, her new husband, my girlfriend working for my ex-wife in the office, and her new husband working for me as a branch manager.
Would you do that?
No. But that was just not kill you, makes you stronger. It seemed, and I'll use my term. It seemed like a good idea. but, you know, I mean, how you deal with, like, getting him out of the way and getting it done well, we'll put it, you know, put it to a vote. But problems. anybody have any ideas?
If you fire him,
it's easier that it's her and him, and not him trying to remove her. I'll give her that much.
I don't see
what?
It as easier.
Ask any husband what it's like to try to tell her your wife you can't do something.
Do you have some?
Well, that's all relative perspective.
You know, anybody else is qualified.
He does all things.
He does. Let's address both of your problems. Carol has this situation, which I've given her the answer to a couple times. Oh, she has my answer.
See, I remember it.
Carol has a 70,000-ish a month Krav Maga school with part of the National Krav organization, and they have all kinds of rules and regulations and so forth about what you have to do to be a Krav instructor, right? And so she had a little uprising among a couple of the instructors, and now she's stuck with this one guy who fits the Krav organization's bill, who's charging her $50 an hour part-time to come teach the Krav. Well, that's, you know, that's my mind,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
He said that's fits. Is this the one? Well, yeah. Who's the head guy here in the U.S.?
The Krav organization.
Oh.
They're in L.A., right?
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, but they don't
all... Well, I already agree with you,
yeah.
That I'm not going to worry about them having it back through. I'm just going to start breaking all the rules and them trying to come sue me. Because I had sued them before, and they know my work, so...
I think they don't have to put in rights to that name, right?
Well, they don't have to put it in, you know, we're in an organization, and it's helpful to be an organization. But I am going to break all the rules and try and get some more instructors.
Yeah, and on that topic, is the Krav organization, what's their rules for having somebody who can teach it?
You can't assist or do anything. You can't even be in the class until you went to phase A, and then you can't take phase B until 6 months later, and then phase C until 6 months later. Now you can teach, but that takes a year, which has just about killed me the first time I go through this.
Right, right.
They have levels to know that. So
much. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, so one is solving that, and you know, that even if you have somebody internal that she follows their rules, she's got a year before they could even be like a low-level instructor. And my answer to that is just do the six-week intensive training program, find five likely candidates inside, train them intensively for 6 weeks, and then, and then put whoever the winner is, in charge and hire him full time. And you can hire a good one full time for what she's paying this guy for 11 hours a week.
Oh, yeah.
And now the next question is, don't take this wrong, but Carol has the challenge of being the highest ranked martial artist, but like a woman running this craw thing, plus a traditional school, and her husband has kind of been there, done that, so they're all kind of like poo-pooing, her ideas, and occasionally kind of gets on board, but they're both thinking that she's kind of like out in left field, this stuff is going to work. So now she's got to solve that problem as well. Is that a good summary of it? So, and in any context, the crop location, take the demographics, where it's at, everything else, other than the actual square footage, it could easily be a $2 million a year operation there. I mean, the traffic coming in the front doors, the market, it's an upscale market that's coming in. They could have a $497 deal, $297 a month deal, no problem. But they got to have a lease system. And how many square footage do you have?
The gym
is 35. In total, maybe 35.
45. But see, a lot of that's ridiculous, like a room from here on over for the air conditioner. I said, is there air conditioner for the whole building? I was just reading. We could put a couple of windows. No, we can't change that. So we're paying hugely.
Well, you rent, your rent's what, $24,000 a month? So you got $24,000 a month in rent, 4,500 square feet, some of it which isn't usable. But you can't possibly make an economic model that works at $99 a month for cardio kickboxing. It's just impossible for that to work. But at 400 a month, 400 students, 400 a month, that's $160,000 a month. That's easy to sketch out, right? And I think it's easy to pull off. So, but now your biggest problem is how to solve your husband and how to solve this crop guy that's holding up. The crop guy thing is easy. The husband thing is
he sells the crop too. He sells everything.
Right.
He does.
Well, he's predominantly at the crop location, right? So he's at the crop location that's crop and cardio.
So
and then she has the traditional schools in a different place.
What's he has nothing to do with that.
What's the price point on crop?
I almost had a deal to get it up to 179.
But he's selling that.
He's selling it.
I don't understand that.
Well, maybe he
thinks the Krav's worth that.
Well, Krav is different. I mean,
No, it's not. You got to look at it in perspective.
Like I said, there's six places within almost a block of us that you can get the Krav boxing for $59.
I'm right next to a gym. Go join for $30. It's free. I'm right next to Gold's Gym. You can go over to Gold's and join for $30. They teach the program. It's part of the program for free. They're quitting the gym and signing up with me.
And the Lavallee's, by the way, in Fort Lauderdale, the doors were joined. The his door was here. The doors to Golder World, whatever was here. Literally, people would confuse and walk in the
correct. Yeah, no, I have a special.
And it was the same thing. They're charging quadruple. Didn't matter.
Maybe the answer is, since he's the main sales guy, he's the only sales guy, you would charge him $99 before? And then you want to go to $140? Maybe the answer is to increment it up where he's comfortable with it, he can believe in it. Maybe once he starts believing that 109, you can push him in a month two to 119, and it'll take a little longer, but at least you don't have a war at home, and maybe he'll gain a little more belief that he can sell it at that point.
My hope was, first of all, I said, no cards. So I just go back and say, instead of what we were doing, cards for 10 lessons. And he was selling it, for less than what it cost to do the 1 year program. It didn't make any sense. So we can make the cards be more expensive and 20 lessons. Because that sounds like a better idea. You get more out of it. And then maybe a 6 month program.
Is anybody making money doing cardio, doing punch cards? You don't think
that's where I am.
Well, you have 15 people on them. I don't count them as students, it's cash.
Okay.
I mean, we have 112 contracted kickboxers and about 15 cards.
Okay.
And the cards, the only reason they went to cards is they can only come once a week. So,
I do have a lot of people
charging.
Travel out of the country.
I'm charging $20 a class. So, you know, a punch card for 20 classes is $400, and they do pay a down payment. So it's $499.
Why wouldn't you just do a price drop offer with a different, you know...
Because I don't want to change my monthly prices. I don't want to charge somebody $90 a month and have them pay $90 a month and someone else paying $150.
Yeah, I would agree with that logic. Your rationale is you have some people who travel 2 or 3 weeks of...
we have people that travel a lot. A whole lot of people travel out of D.C. They'll be gone 2 or 3 weeks out of the month, or they'll be gone for 2 or 3 months at a time.
So that's the rationale for doing a card.
Yeah,
what was he selling the card for now?
Freeze every constantly. We do that away.
What's he selling the card for now?
$150. And there's 10 lessons.
So $15
to last.
See, you should, I mean, compared to where he's at, you should be double.
Yeah, she could get 40 for a 20 class, you know, $40 a class for 20 classes.
Yeah.
He can get 800.
I mean, have you been to Fishkill?
Fishkill?
Where he's at? It's like old Rusting, Hudson Valley. I mean, nothing against Fishkill, but I mean, Fishkill, all that area.
It's a fairly good demographic, though.
That's a good
It's not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad, but I mean, it's not where she's at.
No.
Average household income is about 80.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even want to know what you're in. Don't ever tell me. I'll get sick.
Well, my rent is high, I thought, until I heard yours. I mean,
you're at 25,000 a month.
I've got 3,000 square feet. And until I renegotiated 6 months ago, it was 5,500. Which, compared to most of the guys in the group, is high. You know, most of the time, I don't run into anybody higher unless they're like big city like you or California, because California
I'm
is
higher, but on the land.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
What a bastard. Robert, when we did the thing in California, to echo what you're saying, I ran into a bunch of schools that were grossing 12, paying 9, or 9.
Yeah,
I mean,
nice.
Just ridiculous. You know, they're totally freaking clueless, but they're paying 9,000
So.
Well, anybody have any other good ideas?
Just my first question on the husband issue. Does your husband ever come to these meetings or join the calls?
He hates to go to them, but I did get him to one. San Antonio. I get him now, man. But he does sit there and say stuff like, oh, that's just EFC stuff for 20 years ago. Like,
yeah.
It so isn't. But it's not coming in years.
Yeah, right. So that's a
well,
uphill battle.
The EFC stuff 20 years ago is a whole lot better than what he's trying to do. I mean, EFC stuff 20 years ago wasn't bad. So, I mean, even when he says that, he's discounting something that was 50% better probably than anything he knows how to do now. I mean, I created a lot of EFC stuff 20 years ago.
Okay.
It wasn't bad.
Right. And, Carol, let me ask you a couple other questions. Right? I mean, this is how we run ours, and it's what's really helped with closing ratios. I mean, most kickboxing programs, the closing ratio is 50% or less. We're, you know, of clients that come in. Our kickboxing program, we're closing 83, 84 on average. You know, some months higher, some months lower.
That's good.
But I think it's a lot into the delivery. When someone comes into our facility, and this was some of the stuff I was going to share with you guys, but when they come into the facility and they come to take their first class, they're given a bottle of water and a towel with the school logo on it just for coming in to try the 3-class trial. It's not something they were supposed to get. They were supposed to get 3 classes in their gloves. It's our gift to them.
I love kickboxing?
I am.
So they already have to give them gloves?
I do.
Yeah.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's just, what's a towel? $2? It's a bottle of water. It costs me 30 cents. It's not the point. You know, the $20 covers my cost of
them
gloves.
$40 worth of stuff is fine.
Yeah. It's we've just found that the more... The better you treat them on the front end, I mean, it's just like you treat your karate people. You know, you give them all this stuff to bring home and read through and character lessons and everything else. The more you make that karate program and that kickboxing program similar, and they know they're different, but the more you bring them closer together, the better your ratios and everything are going to be.
Yeah, everybody anchor that in. Any of these other programs, they want the same thing. And you've got to, the look and feel may be different, but the deliverable is essentially the same. So, the more you get to that, the more you're getting towards it being a $500 a month price point, not a $75 a month price point. From a standpoint of dealing with the husband, he may be the right answer. Is if he's comfortable with 99, go to 109, and once he, and maybe give it a threshold, as soon as you've done 40, at 109, let's try 119. And as soon as you've done 40 at 119, let's try.
My other question is, you know, what's the difference in the intro process for that program compared with what Rob's doing? What do you do? Like when somebody comes in, they take a trial lesson. What's the process? And compared to Rob,
yeah. How do you handle
it? Let me ask the question differently. What was his closing ratio at 99?
About 80%.
Well, then it's not that. Okay.
Right.
I mean, if he's already closing 80% at 99, you can close 75% at 149. But it was a good, it's a good question, and but I mean, it was working fine.
But then I mean, sometimes at different price points, different. Like for example, when I was doing one intro for a long time, when I reached about 150, over 150, I found my ratio started to drop, and I changed the process, and then it went way up. So
I do. But I don't think in that case that had anything to do with the issue.
Well, right. It may have something to do with the issue, only because if she's saying that they're talking about going to a gym, I can see that if she's just throwing them into class.
No, she's not saying that. Her husband's using that as an excuse for why the price point isn't justified.
So what's the process? What's the intro process?
They come in and if I
had
an application, I'll fill out the application. He talks to them about how great this program is, often tells them the basics of what the programs are going to be, and they go and they get a great class. The thing is, it's really weird. All of them loved the instructor and loved the class, but they said, "This is great, and I'm taking it somewhere where I can afford it," according to what my husband says. Because after class, you try and sell whoever you can sell after the very first class, and then you try and sell after the second class, and usually.
Now, how is that different, or is it same?
That's completely different. We don't handle it that way at all.
Huh?
We don't handle our intros that way at all.
Give her an outline.
So, kickboxers now, especially now because we're packed, and we can't take new people in class like that. They make an appointment. They get a first intro. She brings them in. You're in another kickboxing school. You should have the fitness assessment form they use. She'll sit them down, just like we would do with a new child intro, and go through what the benefits are that they're looking for. The fitness assessment form does the same thing. You know, what are you looking to get out of the program? What are your top three goals that you're trying to accomplish?
It's not like my intro, man.
Fitness assessment. Do you mean
that's right on the Isle of Kickboxing site? No, that's right on the Isle of Kickboxing site. You have access to the site, right?
You mean just filling in the form?
The bottom of the form that says for official use only,
uh-huh.
That's your fitness assessment. You're supposed to sit them down and go through that with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just so you know. You need to get your husband on the Isle of Kickboxing site. The sales processes are right there. Now, we don't follow them exactly the same, but they're better than what he's doing, I'll guarantee it. So we'll go through the fitness assessment with him.
Don't misread. My sense is he's very good at selling this stuff. He just has a belief system.
Right.
So
yeah, but we found that
this is useful, but I think he's probably pretty good at selling it. He just decided to plan his feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if he could do 80% before,
he isn't
completely messing up on
it. No.
Yeah. But take the feedback anyway. The assessment is useful.
So we do the assessment, right, and then we basically do a first intro, high energy first intro, some basic cardio and calisthenics. Jab, cross, knee strike, or push kick, whichever, and that's it. And we schedule them in then for their first class.
Are you doing the enrollment at the first lesson or second lesson?
Second. When they come in for their first actual class after they take a class, we offer them the $100 off the registration. And
so how long do you have?
20 minutes, 25 minutes.
So it's a little more personalized.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And maybe it just creates a little more value, like we're special.
That's
useful.
I'm going to say I do disagree with you to a certain point about what's going on with her husband, because I know with us, in the beginning, the gym mindset of not doing the intro this way, your conversions at a higher price point are not the same, because they just expect what they expect at a gym for $40. So I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. It's all his fault.
I agree with the statement. I'm not saying it's all his fault. It's only 90% his fault. Because you don't go to 120 intros and convert zero. unless you're just trying to prove it.
How many of those were Groupon? Because the conversion rate.
What are you saying?
Yeah, well, so you got to eliminate those because the Groupon conversion rate is like 20%.
Right.
So, you had 60 intros and you converted none, which still isn't good, but.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as 102.
What kind of conversion rate are you doing on the Groupon?
Groupon, we're doing about 45%.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is, but it's
awesome.
Yeah.
See, my
but see, I'm not.
Are they?
I'm not. But I'm not like her, yeah. Right? My Groupon doesn't hit where I am. My Groupon hits Westchester, so we only get 10 Groupon when everybody else in the Groupon world gets 1,000.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I don't get like, trickle on
the very first Groupon we did for Prop.com, which is hard not to do well on. 300 Groupon is one person doing.
Yeah. Well.
Would you say the issue is the Groupon people are conditioned to wait for the next deal?
The Groupon people are just looking for a deal. Yeah. 90% of them are looking for a deal.
I have a new Groupon because this is a new prep. But the thing is, what I'm saying about the marketing.
Well, it depends. I mean, with that kind of volume,
right.
I haven't seen anybody get a big volume on kids' programs. Yeah,
for the Groupon.
Yeah, for Groupon. There was somebody in Canada did what was hitting it out of
Western Quality has
so
pretty good numbers on Living Social. Gary Meyer out of Boston.
Yeah.
He does real well with Living Social. I know he's doing 60 or 70 deals sold and converting 50%.
Oh, for kids?
Yeah, when he does kids' variety on Living Social.
Okay. Well, that's certainly worthwhile. There was somebody I talked to in Canada. He was in Toronto. Living Social or one of those that did pretty well, but it's few and far between. I hear anybody doing well on kids' programs, but the kickboxing, I mean, it's just kicking ass, and you say prop.
Well, and I will tell you the thing with the kickboxing with the Groupon, one of those is a lot of them are just looking to use it as a supplement to whatever their normal fitness track is.
Right.
It was cheap, so let's do something different for a few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to figure that into your numbers.
Right.
And we weren't going to use Groupon again, but I love kickboxing. Put him in there and said, "We're kicking you out of Idle Kickboxing unless you take all these Groupons."
Well, you understand why, right?
Yeah, because
you understand why, right? Because Perella has a deal with them, and Justin Klein makes all his money.
Yeah,
he makes about $60,000 on a Groupon.
Yeah,
you don't. He does.
Yeah.
So,
which I mean, more power to it.
Right.
I mean, I think it's just fine. It's win-win-win. But you just got to, you got to make an informed decision. I mean, there's. I remember reading the article about the bakery muffin shop. And I think it was in New York or something like that. They did the Groupon thing, and by the time it was all done, they lost like $100,000, practically put them out of business because they got this huge response. I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. But Jody bought the meat Groupon, for God's sake. So now I end up on the running the errand to go buy pick up the meat. But I'm watching it as a business thing. Watching there's this line of people, and it was $40 worth of something or other, and so everybody was asking for $40 worth of stuff, not 41, not 40 and 25 cents. They're $40, and the deal is to get traffic in, so they buy, pick up ribs, and they pick. Nobody. I probably just stood there and watched 25 people, and all of them wanted their $40, and that was it. And you could tell they weren't coming back because they liked the place. It was just this was the deal they were getting. So you do have to be careful with it. But if you're getting that kind of volume, I think it's more power to them.
Well, I think it's different for us too because we want that kind. I personally don't mind that kind of volume.
Yeah.
I would love nothing more than for 100 people to walk through my doors, even if I signed up 5 of them. It's like getting 100 leads at the fair.
But well, it's really a small jam.
Really
well.
I do too.
Yeah. It depends. I mean, years ago I stopped doing lead boxes because we were getting so much traffic from everybody. Everything else, I didn't want jump leads coming in.
Yeah.
It depends upon how everything else is clicking. There is a point at which you can screw up the conversion ratios of your good traffic because you have all the bad traffic you're trying to accommodate. You've got to be aware of that. So.
And they don't
have to
write
it
fast.
Oh,
what is that? Yeah. That's why I'm
Okay, so
have you got
any good
ideas for
yourself? Yeah,
but I'd still like to talk to you real quick.
Yes.
I'd still like to talk to you.
Yeah.
Why don't you set up a little teleconference call with him and me and you and your husband? Okay.
No problem.
But we'll say
I'm sorry.
We'll figure out some stuff if you don't.
Yeah, that works. No problem.
Here.
I don't know.
Or not. I mean, it's the good thing. It'll be in hard to argue crappier location that this is working much better. And you've got this $25,000 a month rent primo location, and you should be a double please. Easy enough. And the reason I say that is if it's just me, he's going to be so, oh, this consulting guy, no, I mean, you know, somebody who's out in the field doing exactly what you're trying to get him to do is useful for him to hear. And that's the, you know, that's what's useful about being in the room is, you know, people hear us say it and say, oh, yeah, you can never charge for an extra couple of months, cardio kickboxing, that's impossible. And then they hear Sean, they go, what did he say? Well, 497.
That's the thing. I think if you turn on the phone, and he a little bit cares that I lost $8,000 this month because of this one thing. But if he believes...
Almost similar to what we do with the karate program, but even at a bigger scale, right? With the karate program, we'll send a postcard, great job. We'll send, a book or a video after the kid signs up. We really modeled the kickboxing program, at least on our end, almost identical, right? So when they join, they get a welcome postcard. If we don't see them for a week, there's the "we miss you" postcards, just like everything else. I mean, and they're specific to the kickboxing program. They're done in their language. They're done in their picturing. You know, everything's done their way. After their first month in the program, we mail them a $10 Starbucks gift card with a card. And the card says, you know, just wanted to tell you you're doing an awesome job in class. And it's, you know, it's in handwriting, font, and I sign it. Thought I'd get you something, you know, give you a nice gift. Treat yourself to Starbucks. Make sure
by
it's
a... By the way, a caramel frappuccino.
Make sure it's a skinny.
Yeah. You know?
That's what we put on there, you know. When they do some kind of, you know, massive goal, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 3 inches, whatever the case may be, we mail or have delivered to their job.
Right.
We make sure we know where they all work and what they all do. We get business cards from everybody, and we tell them it's because we like to refer people in network to people in-house.
Yeah.
We have edible arrangement delivered to their job with a big congratulations card, and I've hooked up with edible arrangements. I made a deal. All the mugs that they send these in are our logoed mugs, not the edible arrangement mug. So they've got the kickboxing program
That's
logo.
That's how Buzz Durkin always did. He had the local florist shop, and he had a bunch of Buzz Durkin coffee mugs.
Yeah.
And for any kind of service recovery, he had the bouquet of flowers delivered to the Buzz Durkin.
Yeah, and you know, just a little note in it, you know, congratulations on your major milestone, you know, keep kicking butt in class, and, you know, it's twofold. One, they appreciate it. Two, everybody wants to know where it came from.
Yeah.
So now everybody at work wants to know where she's doing kickboxing. You know, that is huge, because we get a lot of referrals from that as well. You know, that we really, like I said, we really treat that part of the kickboxing program just like the karate program. We will go above and beyond with all of that stuff.
Yeah.
We do 2 open houses a year. We do 1 in the spring, 1 in the fall. The 1 in the fall, we gave away free t-shirts, water bottles, you know, you name it. We gave everything logo branded away. We do the same thing at the 1 in the spring that's coming up in March. I just ordered 200 t-shirts. We bring a live DJ in. We do a live DJ hour and a half class. So it's the same idea. It's all about the retention.
Twice a year?
I don't know. It's just kind of the way we planned it for right now. We'll probably start doing it more than that.
Yeah, at least quarterly, I would
think. Yeah. But it was just easier to manage twice a year for the time being with things as crazy as they are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that we treat that kickboxing program, Carol, just like a karate program. all the things I do in my karate program for retention, we do there. You know, except for the character reward stripes, which the kids get.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As far as the kids program...
In the actual classroom delivery,
mm-hmm.
how much are you talking about character lessons, life skills, attitude development?
In the kickboxing program? More health value, proper eating, nutrition, proper taking care of your body. We haven't really crossed that threshold because I actually am saving that for that upgrade program.
Yeah.
I don't want to interject too much of it into that class. I want them to pay for it.
Well, now keep in mind that you've got to prep them for thinking that that's what the thing is all
right.
about,
right.
and then you can ramp up the level. So if you start injecting, you know, what we're working on today is visualization. Let's picture your perfect outcome and so forth. Now remember how this applies to work. It's, you know,
and that stuff we do. We also do it with their newsletter.
Yeah.
You know, in their newsletter, we'll give them the word of the month and whatever it is that we're working on that month, and we transfer that into class.
Right.
So, you know, again, same idea, same as a karate program that way.
The concept with information really is it's like an unlimited desire for it once it gets started. But you really can't, like, give them too much stuff that waters down the next thing that they're going to get. Because in this category, right, I mean, you can teach them too much physical stuff. But in this category, the more you expand their mind, then the more they start seeing the linkage and start understanding what's valuable, and then it creates the value for the higher level. So,
question. Okay. You know, now on the track for the kids side of things, as far as retention goes, you know, I think we're pretty much doing everything that everybody else is doing. I mean, just above and beyond customer service has been something that we focused on a lot in the last, you know, 6 months. You know, I mean, we already do all the little extras, but I wanted my staff, and it's funny because, you know, we talk about the Disney model of just, you know, screw it, give something away if you have to. It's pretty much what we've adopted in the classroom setting. You know, if there's a kid struggling, there was a time where we charged for every private lesson, no matter what. It's gotten to a point now where if there's a kid struggling, you know, the staff's been told, just offer up a 15-minute private, pull the kid off to the side, schedule the kid in the next day, whatever the case is. More often than not, the parent comes to the counter and wants to pay for it anyways. Or gives the instructor a tip, and I'm okay with that. You know, the school doesn't need to make the money from it. That's not the point. It's more keeping the kid happy and on track and keeping the families happy.
I have a suggestion. When they come in and want to pay for it, tell them that it's not okay.
Oh, we do. We do.
And teach the instructors that they can't take tips.
Okay.
We use that as part of our...
Because it undercuts the service element.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we never take a payment for it.
You were saying money.
We use it as part of our upgrade. We say that we offer a free mentoring.
Yes.
And so that's one of the benefits you get in the Black Belt program.
Mm.
One of the other things that we've worked really hard on as far as across the board both programs is language. I took a linguistics class at the local college just to kind of find out a little bit about the psychology of words. I recommend if anybody hasn't done that, do it. I don't know if you know of anything good out there to read on that.
There's a bunch of good books.
One of the biggest ones for us was, and I think everybody does it, it was an awesome point that was made to me, was we always say no problem, right? Parent talks to you, tell you, you know, they thank you for doing something. And I mean, it's something that me and my staff do all the time when we don't realize it's a very negative connotation.
Yeah.
You know, it almost is dismissing. And we don't think of it that way because to us it really is no problem that we're working with their child. I mean, it's what we're there for. My staff's been told, my pleasure. It's the only thing I want to hear out of their mouth. You know, so there's been a lot of little tweaks and changes like that we've made, too.
There's a lot of conversation in Cialdini's book that way.
Okay.
There's a lot of conversation in Tom Hopkins' sales book about that. And there was a great article. It may have been one of the Fortune magazine articles that's contained in this book. But somewhere I read an article about the training they do at the Apple store with the employees and the language that they're allowed to use. And, like, one of the things is, you know, you take your iPod or your iPhone in, and for technical, well, it can never be we have a problem. Their conversation just so happens that it's this, this, and this, what I'm going to go do is grab the new one out of the back, and you know, so we can send it back to the tech people and let them check it out. But it's never that there's a problem, and it's never that it just so happens. And our solution is, you know, take a new one, right? And I don't know if you guys have any experience, but you know, across the board, you take something into the store, I mean, more times than not, they're not looking at the warranty. They're just giving the new thing to take out the door, or if it's not fixed right on the spot. And it's the same like the Disney thing. I mean, you know, they're not held very accountable for how many damn new different phones they give out. And of course, their margin is so high that, you know, they don't care. So, you know, they want you to be happy.
Right. I mean, that's kind of the share stuff. Mm-hmm. As far as biggest need for me right now, there's probably two that are bigger than anything. And the first is with the school on such an upswing. Yeah. We kind of talked about this yesterday. Yeah. You know, I was set to handle system-wise probably 250 students.
Yeah.
You know, we did 42 new students last month. We're at 25 this month already. I just got off the phone with my girl this morning. She did three more last night.
What's the breakdown between?
It's about 50-50.
Okay.
You know, we're really even. There's not one more than the other right now. As far as student count goes, the karate program is probably 15 to 20 students more than the kickboxing program right now.
Okay.
I don't think that's going to stay that way for long. Mm-hmm. I think the kickboxing program will catch up quickly.
Yeah.
Especially since there's not a lot of adult-oriented activity schools in my area. Most have gone strictly with children. Anyways, so my systems are screwed because I have so many people now. You know, we weren't set up to handle more than 250. And we're drowning in paperwork. We're missing little things. It's aggravating because it's just the overwhelming aspect of it. There's so much that we're losing track of stuff.
Just raise your prices.
Well,
I'm going to be honest.
One, you won't get rid of people, and that's
right.
But okay, how many regular martial arts schools do you have?
About 160-ish.
Okay, and how many?
We're about 150 karate and about 110 kickboxers. Ballpark.
But your closing ratios on the sales process is fine.
Are ridiculous.
Yeah.
My karate closing ratios the last 2 months have been 100%.
What's your staffing look like?
Myself and my program director are handling the front end.
Okay, the program director is selling kickboxing and karate?
Yes.
Okay.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, that's going to have to change. I'm going to have a program director for both.
Yeah.
You know, one for each, and I know that. My wife is the head instructor for the 3-5s. She has her own assistant instructor that helps with that program.
Okay.
And then I have a head instructor for my karate program.
Right.
And a head instructor for my kickboxing program. So we're running two full-time staff members, my wife, and two assistants.
Okay. And what's your facility size again?
3,000.
So you're juggling the schedule between the two programs.
Yes. Floor size is 1,800, 1,900.
Do you need to do a second classroom?
No. No. And that's. I mean, we've talked to the landlord because the nail salon next door to me is about 1,200 square feet, and it would be perfect for either or whichever program. He will not give me the space for 6 months until I can prove I'm bursting at the seams for six more months. He doesn't want to take more money from it, which I appreciate. I mean, you don't find too many landlords that way, but it's not helping me right now. I mean, what we're basically going to do is we have a dividing wall dividing the waiting room from the floor. That wall's going to come out. We're popping the floor back an extra 10 feet, which will give me an extra 300 square feet for the training floor, which will help a little.
What system do you feel is falling apart?
It's just paperwork, keeping track of paperwork and what's going on with that end of things. Like, I'll give you an idea, right?
What paperwork?
We had three people change programs yesterday, this past month.
Yeah.
They went from, you know, a regular program into an upgrade program. Something happened where they just weren't freaking changing the computer and weren't billed the right amount.
Okay.
So stuff's just slipping through the cracks. And it's not a big deal. I mean, my people are pretty honest. All three of them called me and said, hey, you billed me the wrong amount. You're supposed to bill me an extra $100 or an extra $150 or whatever it is, and you didn't do it.
So it's just paperwork.
That's my biggest, honestly, my desk looks like a bomb hit. There's crap everywhere because when you're doing 10 contracts, you know, a week, 12 contracts
a
week.
So what you need is an anal retentive engineering type administrator to just compile everything through. We looked at the personality profiles yesterday. It's not you. It wouldn't be me. It's not your wife.
Well, it's not my my program director. Is an ENFP.
Never is.
ENFP
too.
So, you know,
yeah, we good salespeople
for $10 an hour, and they enter all this stuff.
Yeah, that's easy.
It just took a lot of time.
I would much rather physically have you set up as two completely separate schools. I'd rather have the kickboxing.
Well, and honestly, we treat it that way all the way across the board, other than how the classes are run right now.
Yeah. That's a physical constraint.
Well, no, see, that's what's nice. I'm not sharing the front of my kickboxing program. What's awesome about it is where we are, and I can't speak for the rest of the country, but where we are, because it's very family-oriented and family-based, and every household has 2 to 3 kids, these women want to put their kids to bed and then come to class. So they're taking my 8:15, 8:30, 8:45 to 9:30 class times, and they're thrilled about it. My Tuesday night kickboxing class.
Do you have a daytime
class? Yeah, we have 2 morning classes at 9 a.m. Tuesday, Thursday, and we do a morning class on Saturday, 15 to 20 kickboxers in each, which isn't a ton. It's not like my night classes. I mean, my Tuesday night 8:15 to 9:15 kickboxing class, last Tuesday before I left, was 52 people.
On 1,800 square feet floor.
Yeah, about 2,000.
Ernie Reyes. Set up almost exactly the way we're set up, almost exactly the same square footage. At one time, he was running 1,000 people through the facility. And it was, I don't know if he still is, but he expanded the thing and so forth. But he was running, I think this is right, 600 or 700 in the kickboxing program, and you know, the rest were, you know, Taekwondo students. So he was running 350-ish Taekwondo students, 650-ish cardio. And I mean, it was, he had literally, like in a movie theater, he had the velvet drape down the sidewalk. And he had the ID card boxes down the sidewalk, and he had a closet about the same the sizes from that, like that panel across, where he had 4 desks in back of employees who were working the phones. I mean, so literally it was like, you know, they each had that much space, and there was a line across. They were doing outbound confirmations and calls, and class was literally, it's like letting them in the attraction over here, right? So they were lined up. There was 100 people in line with the card boxes here, and as soon as that class was out, they let them out that door, and as soon as they were out that door, they let them in the next door, and comparable size square footage. But again, from a system standpoint, your closing rate is fine. How's your retention rate on the karate?
Both are phenomenal. My retention rate on karate is about 4.5% on average.
So you did
2.5% last month. The month before was 7. The month before that was 3. So I mean,
all you need is an administrative person that's hyper anal retentive, that's working 20 hours a week to clean up after the mess. And it's never going to be the head instructor, the salesperson, or you. And you know, I mean, you're an INTJ. That would frustrate, piss the shit out of me. But it's easy to hire that person, right? So you just go look for an administrative assistant, preferably female, 50 to 65, with an accounting background or an administrative background. And you can probably find one semi-retired that you can hire for $20 an hour, and you're good to go.
5 years ago, we hired an administrative assistant part-time. And I advertised the hell out of it, and I found a crappy woman who did it for about 3 years. And when she was finally out of there last year, we had to hire another one. I just put one ad in Craigslist with 65 applications.
Yeah.
And like 50 of them were really good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But those are, obviously you got to screen like anything else, but it's a generic skill you can hire, right? So, and again, you know, don't get a 25-year-old. Get hyper-anal retentive, preferably some kind of, you know, fairly intense accounting background who's dots the I's and crosses the T's. And you've got to have the conversation with her of understand you're dealing with me and salespeople and none of us to the skill set you have, and your job is to keep us in line, not to tell me how to fix me, right? And but that'll be the biggest problem you'll have, is there'll be friction between that person and the salesperson and you. Because they'll want to try to fix you, and their job isn't to fix you, their job is to pick up the mess, right? And it, 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 and I'll give you the easiest, simplest system in the world. You go to Office Depot and get one of those big, you know, file boxes, and you just discipline everybody in the school to, once a contract is done, you put it in the file box, and it's not laying all over the damn place. It's in the file box, right? And you get those little file racks on the wall, so anything you need to enroll a kickboxer is in this one. Anything you need to enroll a karate person is in this one. And then as soon as you finish the paper, you throw it over there, and her job is to fix everything that's in that box. I mean, that's the deal. It's the easiest damn thing. It's not a very complicated system. Remind me, how are you doing the billing on both of these?
ACH or credit card draft.
The other thing you might consider is farming it out to a billing company. Because there is a part of the paperwork and the effort that they'll do that's beyond you automated. ASF Member Solutions, EFC, you know, AMS are all fine. So it'll be incrementally an improvement, but it's an additional piece of solving the same problem that you have. Nowadays. I don't know. I still like having a billing company because I like to have a bad guy that I can point people at.
I don't have those problems. I mean,
well, but
even as we're growing, I'm not having those problems.
Well, right now, you just described a bunch of staff, none of which are particularly organized, focused, you know, deal with that and stuff, right? And so you can either hire a company where that's their job is to be
right.
That person, or you can hire a person to be that person. The problem is you can definitely have one person. And so if they screw up the thing, that could be $5,000.
Right.
And you probably don't want to go get two people because you don't want one person watching the other, so it's cheaper to just kind of send it over to AMS or ESC.
No, I agree.
But see, part of it is I think a necessary discussion for all of it is proper time management for each of us, right? So, you know, as the owner-operator of the school, you've got to be constantly monitoring your emotional state and looking at the things that piss you off and irritate you. And the things that irritate you, you've got to make a real clear decision on whether it's something you should be touching or not. And there are some things, like I get irritated with, you know, high-performance people, staff management, but it's the most important thing you've got to do when you have that operation. It's not like you can abdicate that. But dealing with all the contracts got processed and everything got updated in the computer and the ACH drafts have bounced and the Ms. Jones who wants to put it on hold for 2 months. And I mean, that's stuff that you can delegate easily and inexpensively. So you've got to be constantly looking at the things that, you know, I mean, you've got to be doing $500 to $1,000 an hour activities, not be doing $20 an hour activities. And you've also got to manage your emotional state, because the busier you get, any little ding in your emotional state chunks off an hour or two of productivity. And I've got to monitor this, because I'll get bogged down in something that really should be done, but me touching it pisses me off. And now I lose a couple hours of productivity just being annoyed, right? So you've got to be really careful not to put things like that on your plate unless it's the essential stuff, right? So part of the system that it, you know, I mean, it's not the elaborate flow chart, but part of it is get some gal who's got an accounting background who's really good, who's hyper-anal retentive and the total opposite of you. But that's okay. That's what her job is, right? If you're going to look at that personality profile, you want an introvert STJ, right? So what is that? ISTJ, right? And if you had to, you could deal with an ISFJ. I mean, that's the personality type you want, because they're administratively focused, they're going to follow the processes and so forth. But you've got to have the conversation with them that you're not trying to fix us. You're here to fix this mess, right? But you're not going to fix our personalities. You're going to clean up after this mess, and we're going to talk once a week to make sure nothing that you don't understand has happened. Does that make sense?
Okay. So that's problem one.
Yeah.
Problem two, honestly, is I'd like to do 42 students every month. So I have a weakness as far as marketing goes. Well, one of them we talked about was the birthday party thing. The other one for me really is copy. I suck at copywriting. I'm not going to lie. It's a huge weakness. We do no direct mail. I do no sales letters. We don't do any of that because just I blow. I get terrible response rates, and I know it's what I'm putting together as far as my sales numbers. Is there anything that anybody's been through? And I can read the books all day long, but I get bored, and they get put aside, and I just can't be bothered. Is there a course that you can sit through and learn? I do better that way, or I can sit and learn and listen and take it in. I'm very visual that way.
On copywriting?
Yeah.
Dan Kennedy's copywriting the books.
Yeah, but it's all reading, right? I want to sit in a classroom with somebody teaching it. If I can.
I'll give you $10,000.
Yeah.
Hey, you can do it, but it would be an incredibly expensive course. Dan Kennedy's pretty good.
Well, he's the best.
Yeah. Carlton is doing a thing. He's really good.
I've been to health seminars.
Oh, he's fabulous. Wacky and fabulous. His son is picking up the thing and doing that, yeah.
Yeah, as I can speak it to you all day long.
I think there were three or four things buried in what you just said, Robert. How many rooms did you do last month?
42.
Okay. And your primary goal is just to replicate that every month?
I'd like to.
Okay. And where you think the 42 is an outlier, but it's January, and you hit a couple big home runs on the cardio kickboxing.
I mean, like I said, it was a split, so we did 18 and 22, so it's not like, you know, or 18 and 24 or whatever. It's not like the cardio program wasn't pulling.
There's a fear that you might not continue.
We did 25 this month already. Today's, what, the 16th? So.
And you feel your weakness is putting the description of the stuff into written form.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not necessarily the description of the stuff. It's more the process of the sales letter. I mean, it's knowing how to write it, what to write. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I did.
Kennedy talks all the time about there's words you should avoid. There's different ways things should be worded. And for me, I have just real trouble getting a sales letter written that way.
No, you don't. Let me reframe it for you.
Okay.
Okay. And first of all, I mean, there's enough skill set in this room that just everybody cooperating, and next time we talk, I can walk you through three of them in a heartbeat. It's not a big deal. But when you start listening to the direct response guys, the good thing is Halbert and J. Abraham and Kennedy are all brilliant, and they get you thinking. The bad thing is they spend a lot of time justifying their existence, and there is a point of reality, which is we're in a simple enough business that, and what's it coming up on? 28 years. So in 28 years, I've generated probably 45,000 new loans. Okay, round ass guess, but for at least 20 years, my number was 120. I had to have 120. The total amount of copywriting I had to do, and I went through all the copywriting training stuff like when I still was at Junior Institute back in Washington, D.C., and then, you know, re-went through the newer version with J. Abraham, and then cycled through to Halbert, and then cycled through to Kennedy. But I haven't, I mean, you know, it's probably total words on paper to get all that to happen is 10,000. I mean, you know, a column in the magazine is 800,000 words. So, I mean, it's not all that much. The second thing is you're really good at describing what it is you do. You're just good at doing it verbally. You don't feel like you're a good writer. But it's exactly the same thing. That you take the Johnny Kennedy thing from, you know, way back when, and the deal was all that a letter is salesmanship in print. So if you're good at selling your thing, you're good at the letter thing. So the shortcut is just go take your intro and your presentation for the kickboxing, and go take your intro and your presentation for the karate, send it out to somebody to get transcribed. Toby and Bob have a whole list of people that's cheap. And then take that transcription and clean it up and make it look semi-presentable as a letter. Don't clean it up very much. Then just put an audio or video camera in front of a bunch of people, get a ton of testimonials, and put that in an insert, and you got as good a mail piece as you need. So it's not that complicated. And as far as copywriting courses. Periodically, Carlton is doing something. Kennedy used to do that copywriting program. His copywriting course in a box is just a recording of the seminar. It's pretty good. But, you know, frankly, if you just go record your thing, clean it up a little bit, zap it over to me, it's 95% done already. I'll tweak it up for you and you're done. Okay. And so I wouldn't spend a lot of time stressing over that. What's a little more complicated is when you turn it into like an infomercial, right? And when you get to that point, Scott Smith, who is Gary Smith's brother, Gary Smith is the artist we use for the magazine. Scott is great, and you know, probably for $30,000-$40,000 nowadays, maybe $40,000. He'll do the infomercial for you, and he pieces it all together with testimonials and interviewing you, and it'll be as good as you need it to be, because you know you're not competing with Apple and Ford and those guys. You're competing to just get their attention. So I wouldn't stress that much about it. You know, like that letter you did was great.
What was it going to fuel you?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
going to the women kickboxing, is that the one you reviewed that time?
I changed it since then, but yeah.
But see, if you know how to sell your thing, right? And the only problem with us trying to genericize our things is what he's selling and what you're selling and what she's selling, even though they're all cardio, are a little bit different, right? And so we could start with a route, and then you could modify it a little bit, right? It's what Hafner and I have always done back and forth. Is I create something and he tweaks it for his use, or vice versa. Or one of the letters that I still use, I don't know if he still uses it or not, he paid a copywriter $10,000. And the backstory, by the way, is the way I learned about Dan Kennedy is Keith and I worked together on some stuff, and then Keith hired a copywriter, put the letter together, and then Mike Storms got hold of it, sent it into Kennedy for critique. Kennedy published in the newsletter and gave Storms credit for having written this great letter, when in reality it was Keith that paid I forget the guy's name, but a fairly well-known copywriter to do it. And it became like this big fuss, but I went, well, who's this Kennedy guy? And then I started paying attention to him. But it's not that complicated, okay? And, you know, Hafner, all the copywriting he's ever put together was really two letters he paid a copywriter a total of about $20,000 to put the two together. Plus, it was then just piecing together postcards and so forth with, you know, common headlines and offers and so forth. So it's really not very complicated. Okay. So a lot of times we have a tendency to overcomplicate this stuff. But the simple approach is go record what you're telling people already, because it's working and your ratios are good and everything else. And once you have the recording, it would be easy to find a halfway decent writer to hand it off to and let them clean it up a little bit, right? And then all you want to do is take it back and put it back to sounding personal, right? The Halbert line about it is you want it to sound like you're talking to a friend over a beer in a bar, and you want to be careful about an English teacher making it sound more formal. Right, so when you if you let somebody clean it up, you got to go back and then make it informal, because they'll try to make it too proper.
And also make sure it's written for like a 12-year-old,
right?
No matter who you write it to.
Yeah.
I never let my wife edit my stuff now, because it turns out it sounds like a legal document.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's one of the big problems, right? I can't produce anything without my wife looking at it, and she's a former magazine editor.
Yeah.
So,
how you say he would give his letter to a 12 or 13 year old and let him read it, and if they couldn't understand it, it was heavy rework. Mm-hmm.
And he was about as good as there was.
I mean, I have a copywriting course if you wanted to take the time. You know, it's in a big notebook thing with some like board.
Yeah, I mean,
you can certainly borrow it and go through it if you want to.
That'd be awesome.
I have a question, because part of one of my things is on direct mail too. I haven't done in quite a few years haven't done any
targeted direct mail, mm-hmm. you know, to the parents, you know, children, certain ages. You know, we've done this new every door direct mail thing from the postal office.
Why don't we just take a quick restroom
break? Yeah, okay.
Take a quick restroom break.
And Bob comes in.
Last call for President. By the way, you guys need some copies? Copy me.
I think we're good.
All right, I'm heading out to FedEx, so.
You guys don't need anything?
No, we're good.
Okay.